Right, welcome along. Always exciting being the session just before the attendee party. I'm the guy standing between you and free beer. Fantastic. All right, so welcome along to Agile Planning Tools in TFS 2012. Make them your own. So in this particular talk, what we want to do is have a look at, firstly, a couple of primers. A couple of things just to get us up to speed before I get into the core part there, the make them your own story. All right? So this is a session about not just what the Agile planning tools are, but fundamentally we want to have a look at some customization, how we can make these planning tools fit your team. Okay? So for those of you that weren't in that previous session, and it was a very, very different level session, so I'm thinking there's not a lot of duplication. My name's Anthony Boughton. I'm a Visual Studio ALM MVP. I run a company called Enhance ALM, and I spend most of my time working with organizations, helping them adopt TFS. You know, ALM best practices, getting the most out of the tool, and hopefully helping them, helping TFS deliver the promise. In terms of application lifecycle management. A few things there. I've been a Microsoft certified professional since 93, quite a while ago. Of all strange things, that was MS Exam 001. Yeah, so that's coming up for nearly 20 years ago. It's actually 19 years ago last month, so quite a while ago. It was MS-DOS 5 and microcomputer hardware. It was a prerequisite for getting certification in Word 2. I know. Some of the questions. Here are some really, truly obscure command line switches. Which switch on this command does this? It's like, you're kidding me. / question mark, and I'll know any of those things for you. But you also needed to know the registers of the CPU, the difference between ring 0 and ring 2 or 3. Comes in damn handy when you're writing those word processor documents. But nonetheless, the certification, I've been well invested in it over the years. So it has certainly improved a lot. Most recently, I did the TFS 2010 exam, although it's been out for a little while. That was the administration and configuration exam. A new version of that will be... The ghosts are back. This is great. The ghosts kept us company in the last session too. And as I did in the last session, I'm going to start talking from just outside of the fall zone. Hopefully we'll see some announcements around some of the new TFS 2012 exams. Probably next month will be my guess. They'll increase that from just the administration exam into, I guess, probably about 3, if I had to look in a crystal ball. So certainly some exams coming up. I run the Queensland ALM Users Group, so we meet on the first Friday of each month up in Brisbane, and talk about all things ALM, usually with a bit of a focus on probably the Microsoft product stack. So that's a little bit about me. So our agenda. I want to have a look at some template customization, just a bit of a primer. Who's done some template customization in TFS already? Okay, not bad. So I'll go through a bit of a primer there just for the rest of the audience to show them what that customization's about and how to get started with it. That'll be a very, quick walkthrough. Also then want to do a quick primer on the Agile tools. I mean, that's fundamentally what the session's about, is customizing those Agile tools, changing the backlog, getting the, those great new features in 2012 working with your custom template. So in order to do that, I just want to give you a quick run-through of what those Agile tools are. So we'll talk about the backlog tool, sprint backlog, we'll have a look at the task board, because these are the things we want to learn about customizing. We'll then have a look at how to make those things work, and that's the core of the session. So what is a process template? I want you to think of a process template as being a blueprint. It's the easiest way to think of it. That blueprint defines things like, in this example, the size of the door, where the door is, where the windows are, some construction materials, and a whole lot more. The blueprint itself isn't very useful to us, but we can use that blueprint to go ahead then and create one or more houses from it. Once the houses have been created, any changes to the blueprint won't affect any existing instances of the houses that have been created. Now, that's the exact same with process templates in TFS. Rather than talking about the size of the windows, the door, and so on, a process template in TFS tells us what our work items are called. Do we have a bug or a defect? Do we have a product backlog item, a requirement, or a user story? It tells us what our default queries are out of the box, what fields are displayed, what the default sort order is, and how many queries we get. The process template also dictates what reports get preloaded, what RDL files, SQL reporting services, SQL reporting services reports get uploaded for that particular team project. And these are all tailored for a particular methodology. With previous versions of Visual Studio, or with TFS, should I say, there's been MSF for Agile Software Development for the Agile teams, and MSF for CMMI Process Improvement, the more formal waterfall. And they were the two real choices. You could have always customised those. There were third-party ones that you could download. Then Microsoft brought out for 2010 Scrum 1.0, or as I preferred to think of it, Scrum 0.5. They could have done just a little bit more with it, but that's easy for me to say, I guess. In 2012, we now get three process templates straight out of the box, and the Scrum one has certainly come up to spec. So Scrum 2.0 is a full first-class process template. And in fact, more than just coming up to speed with the others, I'm pretty sure it's now actually the default process template out of the box as well. So that's probably one of the challenges for a team. Do we use Agile or do we use Scrum? Because let's face it, Scrum is Agile. Agile itself tends to be more generic Agile. So depending on which of the many different Agile methodologies you're using, the Agile template's probably a good fit. If you've used, or if your team has had Scrum training, if you use the Scrum terminology, then the Scrum template has a better one-to-one mapping between the terminology used in the Scrum guide and that particular process template. So three out of the box. So what do we use to customise a process template? What's in the toolbox? It was interesting to realise that with the initial release of these things, they were always templates. Templates really designed to be changed. And we took that with all the gusto you can imagine. And we had fun customising the daylights out of things in 2005 and 2008. And we broke things. And then when 2010 came out, we were stuck. Because, we'd done all these customizations, but there was some great new stuff in 2010, like hierarchical work items and a whole lot more that we wanted as well. So what was easier, to remake our changes over there or retrofit their changes back into our template? And it got a little bit harder. So I want to give you a little bit of guidance around that. But in addressing the slide, what tools do we use? From day one, we used the Visual Studio Editor. We handcrafted XML files. We used Notepad, perhaps. And that was about it. There was a free tool that was developed, the Process Template Editor, developed out of, I think Joel from out of Canada made it, if I remember. If I falsely attributed that, I'll have to do three blogs to make up for it. That's my penance. So Microsoft purchased the tool, and the Process Template Editor became part of the Power Tools. And I was in two minds about that. It seemed to make that customization appear to be a lot more easy than it really was. It seemed to give us this false sense of security. Hey, it's a GUI, we can't hurt ourselves. But you can. And there were some things, such as changing states and transitions, that I just always found easier just to do from XML. But handcrafting XML is always, and I'll do it today, I can almost guarantee it. I'll fat finger something off, forget to close a little XML tag somewhere, and then I'll try to upload it. It'll fail. That's all part of that experience. So the tools that we use today, I'm going to demonstrate using the command line tools. WidAdmin is your friend. I'm going to use Notepad to make the changes. And I think that's important because, well, two reasons. It helps you understand what's really going on. And that good understanding will never harm you. The other thing is there is no release version of the Power Tools for 2012 yet. The only Power Tools we've got today are the Beta Power Tools. And if you install the Beta Power Tools, well, they'll largely work. Things that we'll look at today when we go and have a look at Agile configuration and the common configuration files, they don't give us any smarts. They give us a window where we can hand edit XML. And really, if I'm going to do that, I'm just going to use Visual Studio's native XML editor and just take advantage of all the syntax highlighting and the automatic closing of tags and so on. So there is a GUI tool there, but you're not going to see that at all today. Okay. How many people have used the GUI tool? Okay, that's not too bad. How many people think it's great and wonderful? Okay. I didn't need to say anything about it. You guys did all the work for me just then. It's better than nothing, but I don't know, I tend to personally prefer to do most of that work from the command line. It's not fun work. All right. So, some of the best practices for customization. The process of editing a template is one where you will go and... There's no such thing as an empty template. Let me start with that. So for those of you that have never done this, we can go in there and I can say, I want to grab this template and use that as a starting point. With the technical challenges I've been having, I'm almost scared to try it. Fantastic. I'm just going to go into Visual Studio here. I'm going to go up to the Team drop-down menu. I'm going to go into Team Project Collection Settings, into Process Template Manager. You'll see here some process templates. I'm going to find the one that is closest, the one that I want to customize, and I'm going to start with the Scrum one. I'm going to click Download, and I'm going to choose to copy it down to my local hard disk. And just like that, we've grabbed the Scrum process template. We've pulled it down to the local disk. So if you want to see what a process template looks like in terms of its construction, I can dive in here, go to my computer, into there, demo templates, and there's the process template I just pulled down. Now, it is basically a bunch of folders and files inside them. There's XML files, there's content files. In the reports folder, you'll see there are RDLs. In the SharePoint folder, you'll see a bunch of Excel spreadsheets that are reports for us. I can go in and have a look at work item tracking. That's where you tend to spend most of your time with that customization. So you'll go in there and that's where we get to go and do things like rename bug to defect. I get that all the time. And it's really annoying, by the way. Where we can go and add extra fields into our work items. So when a defect or a bug is raised, maybe we want to know or have a field where we can record the person that originally reported it, if they're not the people creating it in Excel, in TFS. Maybe we just want to capture their email address or their phone number, so that a developer working on the bug can conveniently and easily reach out to them. Many, many choices available to us. So we spend quite a bit of time in our work item tracking area. You know, I can do things like jump into type definitions, I can grab bug, I can right-click, copy that, I can rename it, I can call it big bug, because there's going to be something special about it. When I have my big bug, I can then drop back out here, open up work items and edit that. I can tell it that in addition to bringing in bug, I want to bring in big bug as well. So this file is effectively a table of contents or an index to tell the project creation wizard what things to pull off the disk every time we create a new team project. Okay? And I will change, and you will remind me to change. Actually, I'm just going to do it because you know I'm going to forget otherwise. And I really had thought I'd already done it. Okay, what do you reckon at the back? Bigger? Good? Excellent. Okay, sing it if you want that changed again. Again, I'm not going to go back into, you know, the basics of customization. What we want to have a look at are the 2010-12 specifics. Sorry, I just roll forward a couple of years there. Just a couple of final things in the customization primer. Plan your changes. You know, we're talking about changing a database schema here. We shouldn't do it in an ad hoc fashion. And I've seen it. I go into organizations all the time. You know, team X want X, Y, and Z. And then you go to another team and they want these changes. And then you come back and deliver these changes a week later and they've got two or three more. This is a terrible thing to do. You should not have a process quite that in flux either. So what I normally try and do is, you know, push back a bit. Do not make template changes just for the sake of change. You know, don't worry about the gold plating. That's going to cost you later down the track. Look for high value changes and try and stick to just the high value changes. I've also listed there that in terms of a process, you download the process template exactly as you've seen me do. I've pulled down the Scrum template. One of the first things I'd do is to go into the process template XML file and I'll rename it. I'll give it a unique name. In 2012, I'll also give it a unique GUID, which is another change in 2012. I'm going to want to track and record my changes. So where's somewhere that I could store a bunch of files and folders and record any changes that I make?
SharePoint.
Share. Who said SharePoint? See, that's where I wish I had like an UnPrize. You have to give me your attendee backpack for that. UnPrize, is there even such a word? So in our version control system would be a logical place to put it. And again, this is something that I've regularly been asked to do. I'll come in there and say, look, we've done some customization for 2008 or for 2010. Can you redo them for 2012, please? Sure. What have you done? You know, and there's the silence. Because, you know, someone's done it and he's left and then Joe's made a couple little changes to it as well and Fred's done some changes and Sally, she just came and added a few fields for the heck of it. So the number of times that I sit there with the base template, having to do file comparisons all the way through the process template to first document what's been done historically before I can then redo them in the new template. It's time consuming and it's really unpleasant work. And I'm just a bit of a whinger. So why not create a team project for your organization's template customization? If someone wants to go and add a new field, then you know, create a requirement to add that field. Check out the process template through version control, make the changes, link to that work item and check it back in again. Then it's, you know, fully self-documenting and it's a very trivial exercise to go in and see what changes have been made to those process templates. It certainly won't hurt you at all. I think Jason's also done an example where I think he's got continuous integration and deployment of process template changes. Has anyone seen that? On Jason's blog? Yeah. That's probably a little extreme for your average user. You shouldn't be changing that much that frequently. And then finally, test on a non-production server. I know it's not the same and it's nowhere near as much fun, but there are some things you can do that cannot be undone. You know, little things like where you've got an attribute called reportability. You know, you go and set it to a measure or a dimension or a detail. As soon as you do that, that field's going to be bubbled out to the OLAP cube. And as soon as it hits that cube, you're not changing it again. And then what happens is because we can't change it, we got the wrong field type there and we need more characters. Or someone's decided they want to put HTML in there, but we can't change that field. So instead of, you know, bug originator, we now have bug originator 2. And I've seen this in organizations. You come along and you have a look at the schema and there's bug originator, bug originator 2, bug originator 3. You're going, why is there three? But you already know. Yep. It was not quite getting those requirements done down pat at the start. If anything, something I've learned over the years is don't specify reportability for the first month. Then after a month, come back, put that in there, and then you can optimize it for the cube and reporting purposes after the event. You know, there are these little things that you pick up after you've done too much customization. All right, let's move past that one. All right, so in terms of getting started there, I've already shown you that. That was simply the exercise of going into Visual Studio and saying that I want to go into my process template manager, choosing a particular template there that is closest to the one I want to customize, and starting with that. Again, just to reiterate, there's no such thing as a blank template. Start with Agile or CMMI or start with Scrum, and then add your customizations on top of it. So how many people have seen the Agile planning tools? So how many people for 2012 have had a good look at the product backlog, the sprint backlog, how all those things work? We've had a look at the task board. Who's familiar with those things? Excellent. Yeah, you all want to see how to customize them, even though you haven't looked at them yet. I'm impressed. So we better have a quick look at those tools. Okay, so I'll go into an Agile or a primer on those Agile tools. The easiest way to think of it is really as being three separate tools. Firstly, the product backlog. So within our web UI, you go into the product backlog, and this is a UI designed to allow us to quickly and easily add things to the backlog, to allow our product owner to go in there and reprioritize. They can go in there and put additional information, additional acceptance criteria, and so forth into the backlog. And that's, you know, it's a pretty fit-for-purpose experience, and it should be as easy as possible. There's another feature there, which is our sprint backlog. And the sprint backlog's a little bit different. The core purpose of that tool is to help a team decide how much work they can fit into a time box. You know, our project manager wants everything done yesterday. We know that, or the product owner, depends on your methodology. But do we know that we can commit to, and I shouldn't use the word commit. Who's read the latest version of the Scrum Guide? Excellent, I can pretend I haven't either. So the word commit disappeared, because teams don't make a commitment because that's too un-Scrum now. I will reserve my judgment on that. It's a personal judgment. That's right. So anyway, regardless of the terminology, let's face it, our team wants to know how much work they can fit in. Commit, forecast, whatever you want to call it. What can we do to help the team manage its capacity, know what its capacity is, and say, you should expect these in a few weeks. And then finally, there's another task, and that task is our daily stand-up. So as a team, we want to be able to, you know, as part of the stand-up, report on what we've done. We want to be able to show the hours that we've burnt down. We might want to be able to just update it and say, hey, that thing's done. We want to be able to have a look at how are we going. Are we on track to deliver what we've committed to delivering in this particular time box? So these are the three things that we want to talk about. These are the three things we want to look at customizing. So let's have a quick look at it. So I'm going to go over here and I'm going to switch across into my web access. So all of these tools now work in the web, or they've been created in the web is a better way of saying it. I want to go ahead and have a look at my backlog. So what you're looking at here is the product backlog. Now it's very easy for a product owner to come in here and say, well look, there's something else that I want. Give me this feature. And they hit enter and that's added to the backlog. And I can go in there and I can type several things, just hitting enter at the end of them, and I can very quickly and easily get these items into the product backlog. Now, there's got to be a lot more information in there. I've got to prioritize. But in terms of just adding those placeholders in, it's a simple experience. The first item was the item that was highlighted when I did it. And because it was the first item, when I created a new one, it placed the new one at the top of the backlog. Now, unfortunately, that does happen. New things appear that are absolutely priority one. They've just got to be done. That's most of them. Or it could be things that, you know, the customers have spoken about. We want to put those in eventually. Who's ever used Excel? Yay. Who's used Excel for prioritizing the backlog in 2010? Wasn't it good? It was all we really had. We would go in there, we'd have a look at the backlog, we'd have a little column there, and it had numbers in there, and we reprioritized the backlog by almost bubble sorting these numbers. Sold lots of licenses of Team Companion and Urban Turtle, which would give you that drag and drop, which we've always wanted. We've always wanted the ability of saying, well, look, that's not the most important thing, it's actually the least important, so we can just pick it up and drop it down the bottom. That's how our prioritization experience should have been from day one. Okay. So we've dragged, drag and drop prioritization of the backlog is a really, really useful thing. Notice up here, I'll show you how to customize this a little later. All we can put in is just the title of the backlog item, but maybe we want to put a couple of others in. We can turn that on or off. I can also go in there and it can assist me with my forecasting. A common experience for a Scrum team. You know, the product owner, is being hounded to find out when we're going to see the ability to see the activity of a customer. When do you think we'll get that? So we can turn forecasting on. And I can go in there and say, based on a velocity of 20, and here is our velocity up here, so that's the velocity of the last two sprints and the current sprint for what I've committed to. So based on that, I want to do some forecasting based on a velocity of 20. If our team is getting through 20 story points in an iteration, we should expect to see, item 7 there, delivered as part of sprint 6. It's just a nice little feature. Remember, it is still just a forecast. We can change that, of course. We can still reprioritize things. That shouldn't make a lot of difference because I put no size on the new one yet. So pretty much that's the experience of the product backlog. You know, it's fit for purpose, and that's as simple as it should be. Add things quickly and easily to the backlog, reprioritize those things quickly and easily, and be able to, see them in a nice, simple UI. You can still use Excel, absolutely. There's no problems with that, and I'll demonstrate it to you as well. There's a few things I want to show you with it. But in terms of this, it's certainly pretty good. I'll just turn that forecasting off. I guess something else that we're going to want to do is, let's say we want to place these into a sprint. So if I want to add something to a sprint, I'll put the empty one in there. I can pick it up and drop it to the in-flight sprint. That's always good for Scrum. Good, you picked up the sarcasm there. So dropping things into the in-flight sprint is certainly something you want to avoid at all costs. It's a bad practice, but it happens.
Or just drop them back out again.
Or just drop them back out. Now you're talking. Yeah, spoken like a team member now. It's a bit of a game. The history looks great. The product owner put it in, the team put it back out again. It's just like ping pong. Let's not do any productive work. And what you'll see there is down the bottom, it's updated the iteration path for me automatically, and we see that particular product backlog item now is sitting there in sprint 3. Okay, that's what it is. And for the purpose that it's there for, it works reasonably well. Now, there's some customizations, there's some assumptions there that I want to talk about in the core part of our talk this afternoon. I want to move into the sprint backlog. So when I select the sprint backlog, the purpose of this is a little different. The purpose of the sprint backlog is to help our team know, what we can fit in here. We want to take those requirements. We want to decompose them down into the tasks. We want to move from going in there and estimating with abstract story points, and now we want to break them down to a stage where we can reasonably accurately assign some hours to them. And again, that wasn't an excellent or an easy process in the past. It's significantly easier now. If I whiz down here, here's that new feature that I added. It still sits on the backlog because we haven't committed to it yet. So just having the product owner drop it in there is not the team committing to delivering it. I'm going to use that word that we don't like using. To start decomposing this into the constituent parts, I'm just going to click the little plus button there to create a new child task. Update the DB schema to store the PayPal user ID. Typos included. I'll do my estimation and say that's about 4 hours work, and that's going to be probably a development task for now. And I'll go ahead and save and close that. If I have a look down there, you'll see that new task is shown nicely and easily down the bottom there. So in our sprint planning meeting, our team can very easily get this up on the screen. They can start decomposing those the product backlog items down into the tasks that we need. Now, one of the big things about this tool was helping the team determine what can fit inside the sprint. So we want to be able to record things like capacity. So if I go across and select capacity now, you'll see that my team has, what have we got there, six team members. Now, each of those team members is available to work, hopefully uninterrupted, on this particular project X number of hours per day. So what you'll see there is I've given most of them, what have we done, between 2 and 5 hours a day. I've also acknowledged particular disciplines or activities. If I go and have a look up here, based on that capacity, what we've committed to should be easily well within our abilities to deliver. In fact, we really should be picking up a bit more work. But instead of doing that, I think we should all come to TechEd. So, and my clock's set for the VM, so let's take 3 days off for the entire team. How? That was a fluke. I mean, I rehearsed that plenty of times. That's really cool. Who would have thought? So the team's taking 3 days off. We're now absolutely at capacity. There is no wiggle room whatsoever. In my experience, most teams work in one of three different ways. This way, which is just overall team capacity. I don't see it as often as you may think. You know, this is the, I won't say imaginary, that's completely the wrong point I want to make. Fictitious, is that a different word? Where we have a truly multidisciplinary team, where any team member can fulfill or do work of any of the listed activities. Fred can develop this thing, pick up a tester task and do it as well. So because we are truly a multidisciplinary team, if we say we can do 144 hours, and that's the man hours we've got, it doesn't matter who gets assigned what, we can deliver. How many of you work that way, where you're truly multidisciplinary in your team? Yeah, so there's a few. Okay. Another way of that's probably, in my experience, a little bit more common is where we break it into particular roles or activities. So I want to be able to go in there and say, well, the team can do this amount of development work based on how many developers we've got, this amount of testing work, and so on. And that, I tend to find, is a little bit more common practice in Australia. So let me show you how we would go about doing that. Given quite how stretched we are up there, I might... Actually, I'm just going to cancel TechEd. Aren't bosses horrible? But in lieu of cancelling TechEd for the team, I'm going to give myself a day off. That's better. Okay, so I can go and manage these things. I can put all those capacity details in there quite easily. I'm going to switch back or save that. Switch back to my contents now. And I'm just going to show you, I haven't assigned any of this work yet. And with the exception of that last one that I added, I haven't flagged them with a particular activity, a discipline or a type. To make that nice and quick for us, I'm just going to dive back out to Excel. Only on account of the fact you guys don't want to see me do all that typing. I'm going to go in and just do a quick refresh. Okay, you can see that feature down the bottom that I added before. I'm going to go and you'll see that I've got a column here that contains the particular activity type. So I'm just going to go and paste it over here. And I'll go and publish that. Okay, so to be very clear, all I've done in that quick little process is for each of the tasks that our team has decomposed, I've flagged them as either being a development task or as being a testing task. There are plenty of other activity types there. You can add your own as well through customization. I've hit publish. That's then sent them back to TFS. And now if I go back over here and do a refresh, have a look what's happened just here. So it's showing me that based on the strengths of each of my team members, the identified capability, we're okay in terms of development and we're okay in terms of testing. Okay? How many people in your teams would probably work that way? Yeah, anyone? Yeah, I probably find that is probably equally as common as the next. And the final way, the third way that we can do this is in terms of the individuals, who they're assigned to. So again, I had that one pre-created to save some typing for you, or for me, some watching for you. So these are the people that are going to do the work. Drop it back over here. And publish it. So now you'll see a completely different story. Based on assigned tasks to individuals, Adam's going to have a horrible time. I think it was Adam. We've punished Adam. Oh, it's only a couple of hours. No, he can stay back. And I've made a terrible mistake and overcommitted my own work. So I can now scroll down the list there and I can say, well, look, Anthony's overcommitted, so I need to go and find some of the work we've assigned to Anthony. And Cameron looks like he can pick that up. So let's go and give that work to Cameron. Okay, so phew, we've fixed the most important problem. What's Adam? Adam is a tester, so... Cameron's in trouble now. So let's go and find some of Adam's work. Maybe that one there. And we'll give that to Cameron as well, since he seems to be a little bit lazy. He's quite significant in the team too. Okay, so now we're okay. So based on the particular assignments of work to individuals, every individual is now working within their capacity for the identified sprint. Okay, it works that way, based on individuals' capacity in a sprint. Yeah, okay. So regardless of the way you want to work, TFS is going to... these agile planning tools will support those workflows. Okay. Anything else I wanted to quickly show you in there? No, we're okay with that. I want to show you some of the team stuff a little bit later on. But for now, I think I'm pretty happy with that. And then the final thing then is going to be our task board. So the task board's pretty cool. Until we start talking customization and then we get a little depressed. But the task board helps us in the task that should happen every day. Every day we should have our stand-up meeting where the team goes through the processes of explaining what we've done, what we've been working on, and so forth. And this works incredibly well. It's also a great reason that management should go and buy you all big touchscreens. You can say that the presenter said we all need touchscreens. I don't know if it's going to hold any credence for you whatsoever. Or hang on, there's even a better choice. What's a better choice than a touchscreen? Surface tablet. Yeah. Surface tablet, yeah. The Kinect. Fantastic. I've seen that one working. So imagine a stand-up where you walk up to the screen and you go, that task, done. That task, not done. Done. It was really quite interesting. And someone's going, hang on a minute. Done, undone, this is a whole lot of fun. What's that going to do to your history? Curiously, Microsoft didn't care. They said, if people are enjoying their stand-ups this much, we win. Done, undone, it was fantastic. So, let's forget the Kinect for a second. The touch screens, we could probably sell that story a little bit easier, although they're definitely more expensive than a Kinect. So, let's go and grab this thing and Adam... Did you see that drag and drop? That's RDP on a Hyper-V host doing it, and it still works. And let's say that Cameron also grabs that one. We double-clicked it. Drag. Done. So as part of our stand-up, we can update the state of our work items. I can go in there and actually, probably more realistically, I'm going to go up here, and as part of my stand-up, I'm going to say, you know, Adam walks up to the table and it identifies Adam's work. Adam says, yeah, I've been doing a bit of work on this one. That one's in progress. That's great. I was doing a little bit of work on that as well. That started. And of the 12 hours, I've actually done a bit of that work. There's only 8 remaining. What was it like to do that in previous versions? It was horrible. You know, it was open up the work item, look at the remaining work, decrement the counter, go to the work that's completed or whatever the field was called, and manually increment that. How many people ever did it? Not usually. Most people waited till it was finished and just zeroed out remaining work. Absolutely. Fantastic. I can also reassign that work. So Adam's going, geez, I'm having a bad day. Let's give that to Julia. She'll love that work. Now, of course, Adam wouldn't be doing that. It's in a stand-up anyway. Adam finishes his work and then Annie gets up there. And Annie does the same thing. Annie says, well, in fact, I've started that work. In fact, I finished that work and I'm working on this one now and I've already done a couple of hours. Now, these are just TFS work items. You know, that drag and drop experience, I can open up one of them. I can see that it's now in progress. I can see the remaining work's now been decremented to 7 for me. That stuff's all happening in real time. And our burn down chart is also accurately reflecting exactly what's going on. So, you know, with this sort of information, those stand-ups should fit reliably into the 10 or the 15-minute time box for us. It should provide that live state information in there. We shouldn't have to worry, you know, about people just closing the work item when it is complete. Although, you know, if people are completing work and not zeroing it out, just dragging and dropping it across during the stand-up's a fairly straightforward process. It'll give us much nicer granularity in our burn down to see how we're tracking. Okay, so I think they've done a really, really good job with that one. Okay, anything else that I care about there? I think we're pretty happy with that. That's just another view there. I should also point out, see the roll-ups? I didn't show that well. Let's just dive back here. Let's go back to all of our users. See these numbers at the top? We can see that there are 45 hours on this particular backlog item. There are 118 hours still remaining in our to-do column, 20 hours still in progress. So we're sort of getting a lot more information, a lot more easily shown. So guys, that's the, you know, the Agile tools primer. Okay, so where most of you hadn't seen those things before, this is what we're going to look at customizing now and changing. Okay, so any questions before we move past that around those Agile tools? Yes, sir. Yes, I showed the assigning people capabilities, I did.
And then you classified each of the tasks into a capability.
Yes, I did.
Is there any feature to automatically pair them up based on filling up the capacity evenly?
So is there sort of like a resource leveling that takes into consideration their specific activities and their skills?
Yep.
No. Sounds interesting, though. Sorry?
I said the handle works better than project.
Oh, it seems better than project.
No, the resource
leveling. Oh, the resource leveling. any other questions? Yes, sir.
So if you overrun, how would it look like?
With these tools, you will never overrun. Strangely, they don't believe me. these tools will reflect all those overruns for you. Absolutely. I mean, if you... The sprints are data aware, so let me give you the full story. This is a huge improvement. So iterations are now data aware. Did you catch that? We've wanted that for a long, long time. So if you look in the top right-hand corner there, you'll see that our current sprint, sprint 3, we have a start date. We have an end date. Surely someone's got it. It's just a little clap. Good, good. I didn't do it. I'm just going to take the credit. That's a feature that I'm sure people have wanted before, to have data-aware sprints in there. Sorry? What's with May? My system clock. So this is the virtual machine I'm using is the trial and evaluation virtual machine coming down from Brian Keller. Okay, so every time you reboot it, it goes back to a set date so the labs work. But you're paying attention. I really like that. Or I should have just said, you know, I just like living in the past. That could be it too. Okay. So if we're going to overshoot, we'll just see our burn down failing to get there. I'm not quite sure what else you might expect there. In the top right-hand corner, does it turn red if we're looking bad? I don't think so. It's basically, when we start getting accurate data in there, and this is just sample data I've thrown in, you'll start seeing that burn down, which won't finish on the horizontal axis. I don't know if it magically goes red and unicorns start screaming out at you. It will not traffic light it, as far as I know. Yes, sir.
One thing I noticed with it being done by dates now is you can't cheat. You have to make sure your planning's done and before the iteration starts, otherwise you burn down together and screw it up.
So is that a deficiency in any way of the product?
It's good.
Yeah, it is.
But you just got to be aware of it.
Okay. So less places for you to hide is what I'm hearing. Right. Yeah. I think that's probably one of the value adds that we're trying to sell to management. Yeah. All right. So that's our project planning primers. I'm just thinking, I'm happy to leave that there for now. Jump back there. Cool. Okay, so what can TFS do? One of the big challenges, I suppose, was that TFS was sold or presented as the Swiss Army knife. It can do anything. It's very customizable. In fact, over some of the competing products, this is one of the big, you know, selling points, that you can customize TFS. Sadly, it's not as easy to customize as we would like. So we've got all of these great capabilities and tools, but the problem with that is, in many cases, we just want the bottle opener. Or let's tell the truth, you guys just want the beer. But in order to get the tool we want, to get the bottle opener, you know, we've got to go past the little scissors and the saw and the hacky thing and the blades and whatever else is in there just to get to the tool that we want. So the customization was good, but then, you know, we just want a fit-for-purpose experience. And what you saw in those agile planning tools is very much a fit-for-purpose. In terms of your process, happy to look at Scrum, CMMI, Agile, Kanban, any of those, you know, your process, our process, any you can imagine TFS is happy with. Now, delivering that promise while at the same time having those fit-for-purpose experiences, you know, the little swim lanes, the drag-and-drop experiences, updating the states, how do we know what things should go in the backlog, especially if you've customized it? And that's one of the main takeaways of our talk today. What we want is just those simple fit-for-purpose experiences. Has anyone been playing with TFS Preview, the free cloud-hosted version today? So you would have seen, I think they lit up the Kanban stuff in the last update or the one before. So for any of you that haven't seen the Kanban stuff, that's there. And I expect in the on-premise first release or the first update, I think they've announced that they're looking to put that Kanban capability into the on-premise version as well. For any of you that are interested in that, just while it's on the slide. So here's the dilemma. Fit-for-purpose experiences up the top across a very dynamic and customizable back end. So how's that going to work? You know, TFS needs to know what items are going to go on the backlog. What states represent in progress? Because the in-progress swim lane, well, that could be things that are inactive. It could be things that are marked as resolved but not closed yet. So there's this concept of work item states versus the states as we would represent them through our agile planning tools. So we've got to teach TFS this. What field do we use for remaining work? How do we measure remaining work? What's the unit of measure even? I mean, I've talked about story points and then dropping down to hours. But my guess is a few of you don't use those measures. Who uses story points? Great. Who does not use story points for, say, things on the product backlog? What do you use instead? Anything? No? Okay. I mean, you can use anything you like. You can use shirt sizes. You can use the number of Ferraris. It doesn't matter. The point of it is it's abstract and not ours. I guess I should... I don't want to know the answer. How many people measure things on the product backlog in hours? Good, keep your hands down. Nice. We also want to know what columns you want on the task board. So in the task board, do you just want the standard three columns? Do you want four columns? What states are specifically relevant or useful to you? So that's the dilemma. You know, we want to adopt TFS 2012. We want to get those great new agile planning tools. But if you've made customizations, how's this going to work? So I guess one of the things you're going to see a lot of is the process settings files. The process settings files, it's the Rosetta Stone. It helps us decode these things. So if you've done process template customization already, then this is something that is completely new in 2012. We're going to go in and have a look at our common configuration file. Now, the common configuration file, in terms of process, it's for settings that are across multiple features. So, for example, what we choose to define as bug, we need to know in, you know, the task board, we need to know in the agile planning tools, we need to know in the possibly in the product backlog. Do you want to put bugs in the product backlog? There are going to be some agile specific settings as well. That's another config file. So these are a few new additions that you won't have seen before. Oops, someone started the party early. Those guys thought it was pretty good. In terms of our process settings, we've got our common project settings, things like what special fields have we got, what's our state model look like, little things like just weekends. You know, do we have 2 days off? Do they happen to be Saturday and Sunday for the team? Do you want them to be displayed? And there's a little bit more work to go in that area, actually, I found out. What's our product backlog look like? What's the iteration backlog look like? What fields should appear on here? Do you want to only see tasks, or do you want to see tasks and bugs? Categories have been changed or improved. So we've got more categories than we've had before. And categories are going to go a long way in our customization. I don't want to go and say that this type and this type and this type should appear on a product backlog. Why don't I just wrap them in a category and say it's the backlog category? And anything that sits in that category is automatically displayed. That's exactly what we're going to do. So categories have taken on more importance. Some team settings. So depending on our time, I might talk about team settings just at the very end. Teams is a new concept in 2012, a way for us to subdivide our contributors on a team project. And each individual team, they get their own backlog. They get their own burn down and so on. If we get enough time, I'll also demonstrate to you the concept of a master backlog. Because if you think about it, you might have a team of contributors, you might have 50 contributors working on a team project. Well, that's a lot to manage. Invariably, you will subdivide those people. And we're just going to call them teams. We're going to give them, as groups of people inside the team project, their own backlog. We're going to give them their own, you know, charts and burn downs. And I could create a master backlog. So all the work comes streaming in, and then we divvy it out to the teams. Their own backlogs and so forth. That's something we can do very easily in 2012. So, you know, people have been using TFS for a while, but we're at a stage now where there's more maturity. We start wanting to get value out of the processes, and that's what you're going to be seeing. Finally, the start dates and end dates. I won't ask for another clap on. I've milked that one enough already. So let's have a look at some of those files. Drop into there. Great. So I'm going to go into where I've downloaded the process template. I'm going to go and find demo templates. Let's open up Scrum into work item tracking and process. That's a completely new folder. If I open up process, you'll see common and agile. What I'm going to do is go and open up common config. Now, I'm not going to go through and read that line by line. I think it would destroy both of us. We're still okay to read that at the back? You don't have to read it a lot. I just want to show you the kinds of things that are in there. We see things like system.areaPath is team. Now, that's, I guess that was something I was going to add on the very end of things. Should I do that? Should I do that now? No. Here's our remaining work. So I just want to do a couple of customizations as we go. In terms of our remaining work, if you don't measure in hours, you can change it. Of all strange things, remaining work is a unitless field. It's just a number. The interpretation of that number is whatever you want to make of it. So I can say I want to use story points. And then anywhere and everywhere where that is used, we will see SP for story points. Or if you, I wouldn't recommend it, but if you measured in days, I'd be wanting better granularity, but I could go and put days in there. Let's go ahead. I'll change it now. I'll go ahead and make that little change. It's not in the template we're working on. I'll have to come back and redo that change. In terms of dragging and dropping and reprioritizing the backlog, we need to tell it what field to update. So, you know, what field are we going to use for our reordering? You may not use Microsoft.vsts.common.backlogpriority. If you've got your own field for that prioritization, you simply tell it what that field is, and the drag and drop will automatically happen for you. The result of the drag and drop will be that it updates that field. Here's where we store our effort. And across all three different out-of-the-box process templates, you'll see that that field is different. In Scrum, we call it effort. I'm trying to remember what they are. I spend most of my time in Scrum these days. CMMI and Agile both have two different field names there, and it doesn't matter what they are. Here's where we pick up our activities from. As we work our way down, here are some of the categories. Here's where we see the mapping between work item states and the metastates that we see in our process templates. Here's our task categories and so on. Here's where we say what our weekends look like. So our Saturday and Sundays, our weekends. Yep. In terms of productivity, let's just delete Saturday. Maybe not. Okay, so two key new files for us. And I'll have a look at some of those a little bit later on, but let's get into a couple of bits of customization. So there's a couple of shortcuts. So process export, cool demo is the name of the team project. You're not going to spend a lot of time looking at that, but I'm happy to make that font bigger if you really, really want. You just have to let me know. All I've done there is used widadmin, which is the command, and just so I haven't got to type all of that, widadmin export common process config pulls out the config file. And let's have a look at what the config file looks like for that team project. So cool demo common.xml. So this is the config file for cool demo, the team project that we're working on. So now I'm going to make some changes in here. This is where I can go down and I can find the hours reference. This is where I can change that to story points and save it. I'll go back in there. Instead of process export, we'll do a process import on cool demo. Again, it's just calling that work that wit admin command. And if I go back over here to a refresh on my sprint backlog, where am I? Okay, see over here? We've moved from hours into story points. So that's just the very first starting point of customization of our project planning tools. See, that's going to be another unprize if you keep that up. So, it wasn't even a question, was it? Yeah, it wasn't. It was just a statement. Is this where we check it in? Yes. So, following best practices, where we put that process template into the source control system, and of course, it's not a production server anyway. Yes, this is where we'd be checking it in. Thank you. Yes. Correct. It was me just choosing something random. I mean, if you wanted, you know, we're going to measure it in 44 Ferraris, I would have put Ferraris in there. I would not be usually putting story points in the sprint backlog. You're right. Okay. So let's get back out of there. So another common customization that you'd want to have a look at is we want to go and add some extra fields to the add panel. So if I go back here, go into my product backlog, remember this add panel at the top? Now it was nice and quick, didn't take up a lot of screen real estate just to allow me to enter the title of that backlog item. But there's probably a couple of other things there that I'd want to include in that add panel if I was going to use it a lot. So I can go and make some customizations to this. What kinds of things do you think you'd probably want to include in that quick add panel? Sorry? Effort. Who said area path? Yeah, evil. Thank you. how are we going to go? Now you've brought that up, I'm going to have to make sure I squeeze that in the next 10 minutes. Was it 7:15? Yeah, it is. Wow, we're running out of time. And I'm holding you up from the beer. Really, there's 11 minutes left. Okay. So, area path is an interesting one. So, Teams is now used for area path. So, is it a problem or do you actually know what they've done to fix that? It was a problem when you were just being mean to the presenter. I know, it's the end of the day. You can buy me a free beer later. All right, so there is something about area path I want to come back to. Whoever said effort, that's a typical one to add there. And it may also be common, maybe not, it's a product backlog, but maybe we want to put an assign to there. Now, the assign to wouldn't be the person that has to do that feature, but maybe just the person that's going to be the go-to person or, you know, own getting it done. I don't know. Either way, that's a customization we can do. So I'm going to go in and say, this time it's PXA, cool demo. So all we're doing there is instead of bringing out the common config file, we're now bringing out the agile config file. And then I'll say, let's have a look at that file, cool demo hyphen agile XML. So in terms of the backlog, what you can see here is we have our iteration backlog, and that shows the fields that we see. We see our add panel here. And then down further on the product backlog, these are the fields that we see. So those things can be customized. Sprint backlog, product backlog, and the thing that is of most reference or use to us here is this one. And the effort was something I heard called out, so let's borrow that. This is something that I'd love to see a nice little GUI for in the power tools. Maybe. And the other thing I said we might throw in there is maybe an assigned to. Okay, so the opposite of that export is import the agile configuration for cool demo. Go back and do a refresh. Okay, so our add panel now has the extra fields that are in there. There is a couple of limitations there. I mean, these can only be single line text fields. You can't go and put description in there. You can't put HTML fields in there. It kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to even do that if you think about it. It's a quick add panel. So you just want to quickly throw these things into the backlog, and then you can open them up in the normal work item form to fill in the flesh, put most of the details there. But it's still a point of customization. Do something cool. That's going to be 4. And that's going to adhere to all the rules. So if I try and put something crazy in there, it's, you know, aware of all of the rules behind it. And in terms of assign to, I might give that to myself. And we'll add that. And again, because my selected row is at the very top, that's exactly where it's created it. But it's not really that important. So I'll just drop that down a little bit. Okay, so again, a typical customization there to make a change to the quick add panel. I'll show you one other common request, then I'll show you some examples of quite the versatility that you can achieve through customization. So the next change I want is a common question. On the task board, so if we go into our task board, what are those work item types? As the name implies, they're tasks. What if we want to see bugs there as well? Because let's face it, I mean, these are the tasks that we've got to do, but there's also 2 known bugs there, and someone's got to do that work inside this sprint. So by default, all we're going to see here are just our tasks. Okay, so let's go ahead and make that change. So I'm going to go in and say, let's grab our... I'm going to use Agile Demo. I'm going to run out of time. I was hopefully going to jump across Scrum, Agile, and CMMI, and I was going to show you the idea of a master backlog in CMMI. We're going to run out of time for that today. So I've just exported the common config file from a process template. A team project called Agile Demo. So let's go ahead and open it up. And the thing that we really care about here is this thing here, task category. Things that are in the task category are shown on the task board. Now, we don't define that here, but that's where we identify the category that we want. So what I'm going to do is open up, bring out the categories for Agile Demo, and let's have a look at it. Did I get that right? Agile Demo categories, XML. Okay, so this is where those categories are, and the one we are looking for is that task category. Okay, so this is where, and guys, I'm only pinpointing key examples in here. It's really not that big a file. So what I want to do is, in addition to defining task in our task categories, I said I wanted to put bug in. So I'm going to go in there and make a little change. And it can't be the default, so let's get rid of that. And the type is going to be bug. I'll go ahead and save that. And the opposite of exporting is importing our categories for Agile Demo. All right, so then let's go back to here, switch across to Agile Demo. So I haven't configured that yet. I'm going to go into the product backlog and say something. Let's throw that into our first iteration. Let's break that down. Okay, straight away, there's the first sign of the change. In the previous version, when I went in there to decompose something from a backlog item, it automatically took me straight to task because there was only one type in our task category. Now it's giving me a choice. So I'll go in there and say it's a task. Nothing really interesting there. And I'll say that I want to go and add a bug, and I'm going to call that bug me. If I go and have a look at that on the board, is that what you expected? No one really knew what to expect there. So in terms of going and making these changes, you've got to be a little bit mindful. Bugs start life in an active state. There's no such thing out of the box as a new state on a bug. So that's why it goes straight there into active for us. Now you can change these things, it's just a consideration for us. Now once that bug is complete, what should we do? We should pick it up and move it into closed. So if I pick up bug, drop him over into closed, it doesn't let me. Anyone know why? Because the process, what step's missing? Resolved. So bugs can't go directly from active to resolved. Bugs must go, from active to closed or done. They must go through a state called resolved. Okay, so getting the bug there is easy enough, but there's some sociability issues with it. And you can think through your process and just make a determination on how you want that dealt with. Where am I going? 3 minutes. I can go and edit one more config file, and you'll see another column up there called resolved. In the interest of the fact that we've got 3 minutes left, I'm going to skip that bit. Okay, so what would happen is resolve would appear there. I can pick up that bug, I can move it to resolved, which would work great. I then show you picking up the task and moving the task across to resolved and showing you that it wouldn't work, because again, that state doesn't exist for that work item type. Yes, sir. No. So what is the number one thing you think you'd really want to customize?
Color.
Yes. We can't customize the color of the cards. That's got to happen. It really has. When you do your stand-up and you choose an individual, cards that are allocated or assigned to that individual appear in blue. Cards that are assigned to someone else appear in grey. So they've got the code, but they just won't let us customise it. Everyone's asking for it. We'll see it. Okay, so, yeah, something you can't customise. You can't make bugs red and those kinds of things. You can't have priorities there. You can't even choose to put extra things on. Like, I want to show the work item ID in the top left-hand corner of the card. You can't do it. Tiago Pascal, I've said his name wrong, he's implemented a web extension which will do that. But that's a really kind of smelly, dirty way of doing it. It worked. The last thing I want to show you is just something for a little bit of fun. In terms of, can these tools light up and work with your custom processes? Firstly, if I switch across to Agile V5, did I create that? If you guys are using 2010 right now, if you've got a custom template and you upgrade your server to 2012, these features won't automatically light up. They won't exist. In the same way that you did with 2008 to 2010, you know, you had to go in there and you use command line tools and you have to retrofit all of these new features in. I wanted to show you that. If I go across to admin, see configure features. So this is a 2010 team project on an upgraded server. To enable code review, my work, the planning tools, the storyboarding and everything, I click verify. It finds the template that's closest. I click configure and 1, 2, 3... It's done. Okay, so if you're on 2010 today, you've got 30 team projects, you upgrade that server in place or you do a migration-based upgrade, it doesn't matter. Using that feature enablement wizard, you will automatically get all those features lit up for you, which I think's... Yeah, that's really good work. Yuld is the guy that did that. I'm saying his name wrong. E-W-A-L-D. Yuld. Top bloke, because that was horrible work to have to do. So, lots of customization. Who said that? What would stop that working? The tool is a conservative tool. The tool will inspect your template. It'll look at how much customization you've done, and only if it is feeling confident in a conservative way will it make those changes. If there is any doubt, it's going to say no. It has to. So, if you've done some... I mean, I can't pinpoint it for you. If you've done some normal style customization, it's probably going to work just fine. If you've done heavy customization, the tool will probably back out and say no. And you'll have to go through the manual steps to do it. Okay. And then you can just have a little bit of fun as you get ready to walk out the door. Here's my role-playing. Wrong one. Here's my role-playing. This is really cool. So you've got dungeons you've got to go and conquer. So this is a particular dungeon that we want. It's got a level in there, a particular area, which is great. You've also got dragons that you've got to deal with. So I can go in there and say, these are the dragons that we're looking for. And then we create quests. So we're going to go on a quest to do this. And as part of the quest, you've got to go and kill 5 remaining monsters. The character class for this particular quest is a druid, which doesn't really come in particularly helpful if you're dealing with dragons. I can go in there and say, well, tell me about the dragons. Ooh, there's an ice dragon. We open up the ice dragon, and oh, did you know you can put inline images into the description automatically? Oh, yes. And your text fields in 2010 will automatically be converted to HTML fields in 2012 to do this and do inline graphics. I should have just showed you that at the front and got the clap. All right. You know, we've got levels over here, backlog priorities. Let's get out of our dragons. I want to show you the last one, ticketing. So in terms of a ticketing system, you know, almost like a mini help desk. I didn't get a chance to put the last one up. The last one was going to be a CRM solution. So in terms of the boards and the work item types, you know, we've got a prospect that becomes a customer. Our queries aren't, you know, how many bugs have we got? Our queries are what customers haven't we contacted in the last month? But let's look at our ticketing system. So I want to go in there, and these are the tickets that are assigned to me. I want to go on to create, back here, oh, I haven't lit these up yet, damn, I want to go and create a new ticket. The customer that I'm working with is, well, probably not me, is Brian, And we want to be able to reach out to Brian when the job's fixed at Microsoft.com. I can go in there and specify urgency for this particular ticket. I can put a due date when this needs to be done. I can go in there and specify the information. I can look for related tickets. I can even go in there and link it to labour tasks for my, you know, my ticketing system. I haven't finished that little part there, but I could also, in those little tiles that come up on the dashboard, they show summaries of how many tickets I've got on hold, what my new tickets are. My alerts can tell me if there's been a ticket sitting in the queue for more than 3 hours that hasn't been looked at yet. You know, there's so much customization you can do. I just wanted to sort of peel the blinkers back a bit and say, you know, if these abstract things can light up these process, these agile planning tools, then you should be able to get these tools working with your custom process templates. Okay, and I'll just skim straight to the end there because it's beer o'clock. And I'll switch back there. Okay, you've got no questions apart from where's the beer? You can reach me there. I'm happy to hang around a little while just as we get ready to head out for beer. Some related content. Cogan's got a talk tomorrow morning at 8:15, bright and early. He's such a morning person too, Adam. You can tell him I said that. So a little bit more about some of the new TFS stuff in there. Some great hands-on labs. There's about 20 hands-on labs that you can do in the hands-on lab area around all of these things. Not around template customization, but around using the planning tools. So I think you'll find that really helpful. Don't forget to fill in your evals. Always good to get some feedback. What can we do to make TechEd a bit better for you? Guys, have a great TechEd party tonight. Teardrop on the fire feet, loose on my brain.